Shalom Aleichem, everyone. It's Binyamin Hammer, National Council Young Israel. We're happy to welcome Rabbi Willig Shlita to be on the call for our 34th call. Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you very much. Okay, we're beginning with a very difficult question. Question number one. A family in my shul has a wonderful boy with severe learning disabilities and social skill issues. He's graduating from a yeshiva with special education track. I say wonderful because he's not angry and does not appear to be going off the derech. He sadly has no friends, but comes to shul on Shabbos with his father and davens. The one or two high schools that may accept him are asking for $50,000 yearly tuition with no scholarships, an amount of money that the family does not have, nor would it be easy to get from the community at large. A suggestion has been made that one of the special ed rebbeim from his elementary school and trained in special ed could be hired to be his rebbe in the afternoons for a modest sum of $16,000. And learn with him privately each afternoon 2 or 3 hours a day, 4 or 5 days a week. The boy would attend a special ed program at the local public high school, where he would get all the services for free. He would be home by 2 p.m. to learn with the Rebbe. Being that I'm the Rav and a partner in raising the funds for the child, should I encourage this suggestion? Does being in any kind of yeshiva and raising steep funds from the tzibur outweigh this suggestion of attending public school in a private rebbe? It's an excellent question, very hard question. Depends on the public school program. Sometimes special ed programs in public schools are different than regular public schools. Regular public schools, unfortunately, are filled with promiscuity, are filled with drugs, crime, intoxication, all kinds of terrible things, and it's impossible to put a boy, a teenage boy, in that situation. However, I don't know which community this rabbi is in, but in some communities, especially in a, what we call a special ed program, it could be that those manifestations don't exist. If that's the case, the bacha, the boy, would not become destroyed and ruined in that kind of a setting. And it's possible that he may even get superior services in the public school than he would get even in the two high schools that are willing to take $50,000. As a rule, with exceptions, special ed programs are superior in public schools, even to the wonderful yeshivas that are willing to provide such services for these children. On the other hand, if, in fact, the spirit in the special ed program in the public school is as terrible as it is in the regular public schools, with the drugs and the promiscuity and the alcohol and the crime, then you just can't send them there. You'll have no choice but to try to raise money or to find some other solution somehow. Question number two. I am a retiring Rav that will be remaining in my community. The shul has asked that I advise them on their search. One candidate they are seriously considering has an acceptable smicha in order to find yeshivas. However, surprisingly, at one point in his career, served as a rabbi of a shul without a mechitza. The committee may or may not find this out. A, do I tell them? B, this situation is recent history taking place over these past 10 years, not 30 or 40 years ago when rabbis found or were even given heterim. Make parnasa, turn around the shul. Should an applicant who has served in a shul without a mechitza be given an opportunity to serve in a traditional Orthodox shul? The answer is, in most cases, no. He has disqualified himself from serving as a rav in a traditional Orthodox shul with a mechitza. And he shouldn't even be a candidate, unless he's done shuvah. How do you demonstrate the person did tshuva for such a thing? It's hard to know. But if he did tshuva, the answer is yes. If he didn't do tshuva, if you can't tell if he did tshuva, the answer is no. Question three. We have Shabbos morning youth groups through fifth grade. After that, the pre-bar mitzvah boys and the bas mitzvah girls daven in the main shul next to their parents or just hang out. They have not been successful developing a consistent teen minyan. Parents have asked if we can set up a non-minyan for fourth, fifth, and sixth grade children. There'll be no minyan, no kaddish, no kedusha, but that they would take out the Torah, have a Bal Kori read from it, and call the boys of the Torah for a pseudo aliyah without saying Hashem's name. Their hope is that it would build up a successful Teen Minyan over time. Would it be mutter to take out a Sefer Torah for this purpose? The answer is no. We don't do these things. We've never done these things. Simchas Torah, yes. Every bocher gets an aliyah. And it does say Shem Hashem, but there are, of course, 10 Jews over by mitzvah in the room. Therefore, if they want to have some kind of a pseudo landing, it should be from a chumash. They got a chumash, they want to read the parsha. That's okay, but not with a Sefer Torah. Question number 4. Shabbos Chazak. Is it a problem of a hefsek for the Bal Kori to receive the aliyah for Chazak? Does it saying Chazak be a hefsek before his bracha? The answer is yes. It's considered to be a hefsek. There's nothing wrong with the Bal Kori receiving the aliyah. He just shouldn't say Chazak. Just, you know, when everyone says Chazak, Menis Chazek. So normally he repeats Chazak, Menis Chazek. And this time he does not. I once ended up being the Bal Kori in our shul for Chas and Torah, which is the ultimate Chazak, Menis Chazek. And every year when I'm not the Bal Kori, I say Chazak, Menis Chazek. But that year that I was the Bal Kori, I didn't say it. That's the correct psak. Question number 5. Mishnah Berurah writes that when calculating Mincha Gedola, you should calculate a 30-minute half hour, even when the hour is only 45 minutes. Is that necessary regularly when Shul is davening Mincha Shabbos because people may not come back and Marv will be davening after Shabbos? If you look carefully in the Mishnah Berurah and Shara Tziyun, Simon Reish Lamed Gimel Sitkot and Ches, you will find, to the contrary, he seems to be leading to the opinion that it depends on what we call Shos Zmanios. So if the hour is 45 minutes, it's enough to wait 23 minutes after Chatzos, and then you can daven Mincha. At the end, it's correct. He expresses some doubt. The doubt is that if the reason for this half an hour is people may make a mistake in the calculation, he thinks it's more logical, just a matter of a mistake, to have a 30-minute flat amount. Of course, that would be a leniency in the summertime. But let's remember, if the question is one of making a mistake, that's a shalom of the Rabbanon. The whole thing is a remote possibility, and we can say svega the Rabbanon lekula, and therefore, I believe you can rely upon the 23 minutes in the wintertime. There is an opinion which says that this idea of the half an hour is the oraisa when it comes to korbanos, korban tamid, and would have a more severe impact with respect to tfilas mincha. However, according to that opinion, presumably it would depend upon shos manios. It's based upon when the shadows start to tilt in one direction. Look at Sefer Ishe Yisrael in Perek Chav Zayin, Siv Beis, with the footnotes. He seems to advocate this approach. And therefore, the bottom line is we could be lenient. Question number 6. Approach to dealing with someone whose father is living with him. Where do you draw the line between taking care of him to the extent of telling him what he has to do versus Kibbutz Av? I believe the correct source for this is the Gemara in Masechta the Kiddushin with Rashi. We'll read the Gemara. That's Lamed Aleph. It starts in Amud Aleph and goes to Amud Beis. Yesh machil aviv pisyoni. A person can give his father ripsteak, the fanciest possible food. V'tordo min ha'olam. What does that mean? Rashi explains. Excuse me, I made a mistake. Pisyoni is fancy chicken, not fancy meat. Okay? And told them in the Olam, says Rashi, Shenenash Olav, that the son who's giving his father the fanciest chicken is going to be punished because he demonstrates stinginess, Rashi says. V'yesh matchino berechayim, that means he helps his father participate in difficult work in the house. U'mevio l'chayim abba, and he gets rewarded, even though he's making his father work hard. Rashi explains, Mechavdo b'dvarov, tovim v'nichumim. In other words, you talk to him nicely, and he explained to him the Lashon Raka, that there's not enough money to support the family unless everybody in the family, even including the aging father, is going to work in this grinding situation. And Rashi adds, from a Yerushalmi, a person gave his father the fanciest chickens, and one day the father said to him, where do you get all this? He says to him like this, Saba, he must have been, Zaidi, Grandpa, Maich Baslach, what do you care where I got it from? Just eat it. Just chew it and eat it. Whoa. Means that he lost his, he got a terrible punishment for that, even though he's giving the fanciest chickens. And another fellow, his father was helping him to work of zaken, and the king asked for the father to go to work at the king, and the son said, I'll go work for the king, and you help out here in the mill in the house, and he gets olam haba, and the first one will be punished. So that's the paradigm, kiddush neflam and aleph amud beis with Rashi. So obviously, the question that's being raised over here about telling him what he has to do versus kibud av, you don't tell your father what he has to do. The question is wrong. You ask, you explain, you exhibit tremendous honor in your conversations with the father. The main thing is giving the tremendous honor and respect. You don't tell him. You say, Daddy, you know, we have a little problem over here. Maybe we can help out. Maybe we can do this. Maybe, you know, it helped with us with that, with this. The tone of voice is everything. And Rashi already comments in Parshas Toldos, this difference between Yaakov and Esav, when they spoke to their father Yitzchak. He's very, very careful how one speaks to a parent. Even if there is a need for the parent to somehow contribute to the income of the family or to the housework of the family, but it has to be done with very, very careful speech. Question 7. If 6 Sifrei Torah, some are cleaner Mahuda than others, should we only use those that are Nuhuda, or should we use them all? As long as the Sefer Torah is kosher, it can be put into the rotation. Shouldn't just sit there and never be used. You want to have the fancy Mahuda Sefer Torah? So, of course, on Shabbos and Yom Tov, you can have the more Mahudaical ones, and the other ones, maybe Mondays, Thursdays, Mafters, whatever. You figure out a way how to, the Hashkama Minyan, the Youth Minyan, figure out a way how to apportion that every Sefer should be used some of the time. But everyone should be used. On the other hand, if there is a question about the kashrus of a particular Sefer Torah, it should not be taken out at all, even if it means using the same Sefer Torah over and over again. Question 8. The minig of the shul is to make kiddush Friday night, but we often do not have a child to drink the wine. Should we try to fade out the minig, or should we continue with the person making kiddush drinking the wine? Very hard to change a minig. When I was a brand new rabbi in Riverdale, I wanted to change this minig, this very minig of kiddush Friday night, because where I had come from the yeshiva, and before that I was in Eretz Yisrael, and before that I was in the shtibel, they never made kiddush. And then Shulchan Aruch says, Rambam says you shouldn't make Kiddush. They told me, young man, we don't change customs over here. The Rambam says we don't change any customs. It's dangerous to change customs, so we should not be changing the custom of making Kiddush on Friday night. Here, so then if on a particular Friday night there's no child, it says in the Shulchan Aruch and the Mishnah Berurah, so an adult will drink a malo lugmav of the grape juice and yotze the b'makom suda in a pinch. Truth to be told, if there's never a child, one can argue that there never was a minig to make kiddush and shul regularly when there is no child. Once in a while, he's missing a child. That's an arguable point, but I still believe it's preferable to keep the minig going, even if it means that an adult who makes kiddush will have to drink the grape juice every single week. 9. What is the definition of a tinuk shenishba? Should be given aliyah to such a person, even if the policy of the shul is not to give an aliyah to a machal Shabbos? The answer is, depends on the policy of the shul with the tinuk shenishba. If until now they gave a tinuk shenishba who was machal Shabbos an aliyah because it's not his fault, they should continue to do so. If they, until now, the policy of the shul to not give a machal on Shabbos included even a tinush and nishma, they should continue that policy. All depends on what the policy was until now. Okay, question number 10. Here we go. In my out-of-town community, there was a treif restaurant that sells sealed, double-wrapped kosher meals prepared by the local Chabad. The store sells them to go or will heat them up in the restaurant while sealed and double-wrapped and give to customers while still seated to open up and eat in the store. On the menu, it even says that they sell glatt kosher meals, and this arrangement is well-known in the community. Does any of this present the problem of Maris Ayin, or may one eat this kosher food in the restaurant? Well, we all have this on an airplane. You go on an airplane, and they give you a sealed, double-wrapped, and there's no Maris Ayin. Everyone understands that that's what you eat on an airplane. So if the only place we can get the airplane meals, airline meals in your town is the treif restaurant. So instead of taking a flight, you go to the restaurant. You get the same airline meals. Everyone knows about it. It's clear you're eating it out of an airline kind of a container, not exactly the fanciest gourmet. That would be considered permissible. Question 11. What types of mistakes should be corrected during laning to make a difference if it is A, the regular Balkori or somebody reading their Bar Mitzvah Parsha, B, Monday, Thursday, Shabbos, Mincha, Shabbos morning, C, during the Haftorah, and I guess D, if a mistake is made after Hashem's name is said, should the Balkori go back to the beginning of the Pasuk? So, if you look in the Tur in Or HaChaim, Simon Kuf Mem Beis, he quotes a Sefer HaManik that you don't make the Balkori go back. You shouldn't embarrass him. It's an embarrassment. And you go to the Kriyas HaTorah anyway. That's a big Kiddush. Where did he get it from? It's a Medrash. The Medrash says a person was supposed to say Aharon, and he said Haron. He left out the Aleph sound. That one fulfills the mitzvah. The Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch don't seem to agree with that. And some limit this Sefer HaManik to a case in which there's no change in the meaning. Everyone understands that he said Haron, he meant Aharon, he just sort of left out the Aleph. That could be as if he said a im instead of in, where the meaning is clear. Those kind of mistakes. However, if the meaning changes from past tense to future tense, or something along those lines, that may be worse. Maybe even the Manig would agree, you have to go back. It's not completely clear. In any event, we don't follow the Manig. We make a person go back even for Aaron and Aharon, although there's room to be lenient if it's a little bit more less conspicuous. Often happens, the Mems and the Nuns, in a plural, you can't really hear right. And things of this nature, some of the other sounds are not completely clear. As long as there's no ambiguity, there's room to be lenient and not make him repeat, again, if it's not blatant. But let us go further and discuss someone who was a bar mitzvah boy. So the concept of bar mitzvah boy, you have a greater consideration of what we call kavod habrios. So kavod habrios is a major factor. The honor of the poor bar mitzvah bacha who's getting up there to daven, to lay in front of the whole shul, he's only 13 years old, is a factor. Now it says as follows. If a bar mitzvah bacha makes a mistake, and you correct him once or twice, it's okay. He'll get over it, and it will not be a terrible experience for him. Once in a while, Bar Mitzvah Bacha is simply incapable, and he makes many, many, many mistakes. Ideally, he should never have been allowed to land in the first place. You say, I'm sorry, you just have to, you know, just take mafter or something like that. But in the sad case in which it was unknown in advance, they allowed him to make the lane with 100 mistakes, it seems to me that he's going to be terribly embarrassed, he'll be mortified. Imagine 100 mistakes for a 13-year-old boy. Let it be, and you have to rely on the most lenient view. And even if you weren't Yotze, is an issue of covered abrius. But again, in advance, every bar mitzvah should be tested by a capable person to make sure he's not making mistakes. That's critical. B, Monday, Thursday, etc. If you look in the Bir Halacha, right there in Siman Kuf Mem Beis Sif Aleph, Dibur Masal Machzirin, he says it only applies to Shabbos. Where do you get it from? Because in Siman Kuf Lam and Zayin Sif Gimel, it says if a person is laning on Monday or Thursday, a Shabbos Mincha, and he leaves out an entire pasuk, you don't have to go back as long as every aliyah has three psukim and a total of 10. So here he said the pasuk just made one slight error. It's true that the Bir Halacha suggests a remarkable idea. If you leave the whole pasuk out, that's okay. But if you make a mistake, it's worse. That he just, I think, mentions as a possibility, but I don't think he really paskins that way. And therefore we should treat these situations as not requiring to make a person go back. Once again, as long as that aliyah has three psukim without that pasuk, and as long as the sum total is 10. C, during the haftarah, it depends. Most shuls these days, haftarah is read from a plain printed work, and everybody says along by himself. That being the case, there's no need to make the person go back, because everyone has fulfilled the mitzvah himself. If he's a bal kari from a klaf, then people are yotze by his reading, then he has to go back. D, look at the Tzitz Eliezer, Chelek Yudbeis Siman Mem, it's quoted in the Pesukei Teshuvos and other the Dirshu. He says that the custom, which is the correct custom, the person says Shem Hashem, you finish the pasuk. Normally, you just go back to the beginning of the pasuk. You finish the pasuk unless there's another Shem Hashem ahead of you. But if there isn't, you finish the pasuk, and then you go back to repeat the pasuk a second time. The logic behind that is, if Shem Hashem was mentioned, you don't just mention Shem Hashem twice in the same phrase. You finish the pasuk, even with a small mistake, so it's sort of a proper usage of the Shem Hashem. They repeat the pasuk without the mistake. There is a custom, the question surprised me, but there is a custom, which the Brewer quotes at the end of his that once you say Shem Hashem, you don't go back at all. That's not accepted in the halacha. Question 12. Can a solar cell battery be placed in a well-lit room or next to a lamp on Shabbos? This is a watch with a battery that must be charged in the light. Can it be left intentionally to charge it? The answer is absolutely not. No way. There's a discussion if a person is wearing a watch on his wrist and they already hit it and it would last till after Shabbos anyway. You're walking with it anyway and it's charged by your arm moving. That's a serious question. Shlomo Zalman has certain leniency. He's quoted in Sefer Shemir Shabbos Kolchasa. But to actually place an item in the sun in order to have a charge would not be allowed. Finally, question 13. Elderly woman who was quite sick insists on being cremated, Rahman al-Islam. Her daughter is an only child, also secular, but is distraught over this decision and doing what she can to get her mother to change her mind. This situation is taking place far away from my community. I received a call from a Jewish social worker involved with the mother and daughter who asked me the following question. The elderly woman's husband passed on many years ago and has purchased a couple's grave at our shul's chalukah. The daughter is asking if she does not succeed in stopping her mother, could she bury the ashes in the reserved grave next to her father? What can be done here? Here, it depends. Strictly speaking, it's permissible, perhaps even a mitzvah, to bury the ashes. However, there's been a long-standing custom not to do it. L'migdar milsa, because we are so strongly opposed to cremation. And Rav Kook has a very strong tshuva about this. Rav Henkin Zal was more lenient. He appeal to the sense of Tina Shenishba. She spoke about it a few questions ago. But, of course, in reality, if you will allow it, more people are going to be will be cremated. People want to be buried in a Jewish cemetery. This fellow, this a woman, I should say, if you tell her, listen, lady, don't you want to be, your remains to be near that of your husband, assuming they were happily married? If you say either you bury your whole body there or bury your ashes there, she may say, I'll bury my ashes there, good enough for me. If you tell her that either you're buried there in toto, or if you're cremated, the ashes will not be buried there because the shul will not allow it to happen, and that is the prevailing custom, she may think twice. That itself may cause her to change her mind and not be cremated. This is what I heard from Rabbi Elchanan Zon Shalita, who is the expert on matters of Chevra Kadisha and burial. And therefore, the bottom line is sad to say, that we should not allow these ashes to be cremated, even if, according to strict halacha, it's permissible and even a mitzvah to do so. We have to do what's called a migdar milsa. We have to do our best to discourage this terrible practice of cremation. And if, in order to do that, we have to tell an individual who was that their relative was cremated will not be permitted to be buried in a burial plot of a shul. That's the right way to do in order to hopefully discourage people in the future from opting for cremation in encouraging them to have a kosher Jewish burial. This concludes the questions for today.
Rebbe, thank you very much. We hope we can call on you again in the future when more Shabbos come. Thank you.
Be well. Bye-bye.
Hatzlacha. Take care. Bye-bye, everyone.